Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 16th of October 2017. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to my Instagram account and follow me at Little Gerald Quinn. A busy Monday. You have Monday Night Football, Houston, Tennessee and Indianapolis. Mariota has been cleared to play, so he will play this week. You also have, come up in about a half hour, a little over a half hour, Game 3 of the American League Championship Series. Yankees trying to get on the board after losing two classics down in Houston, and you know, we're just absolutely pitching gems by both teams, really, but in particular, of course, Keuchel and Verlander. We'll talk more about the Major League Playoffs later on in the show. A busy show today, as we'll go top five. We'll do our top five teams, the NFL teams. We'll go through some of the key games and also a bit of disturbing pop culture. I'm going to touch on that. And then we might get to the NBA. It might get a little, because the NBA season starts tomorrow. Cleveland, Boston, and Golden State, Houston will kick off early tip-off to the NBA season a couple weeks earlier, as they want to, of course, stretch out the season, you know, because these players, you have to collar them nowadays. They don't make them like we used to. But it is what it is. We want those guys to be healthy come playoff time and in the course of the regular season. So we begin with the Washington football team, who, you know, sometimes I'm not going to say it's better to be lucky than good, but who to me was extremely fortunate to take out San Francisco 26-24. This was a game where you walked away. Obviously, you'll take the win as a Washington fan, but it felt like a loss. I'm going to be honest with you. Now, again, only 16 games. Every win counts. You will take any win. I don't care how ugly it is. I don't care if you win 2-0. But this was a game that Washington, that frankly should not have been this hard. Washington's up 17-0. Got off to a solid start. Nice opening drive. San Francisco can't do anything offensively. All of a sudden, they put a guy in who I'd never heard of in C.J. Beathard. And, you know, you make this guy look like the second coming of Steve Young. I mean, I'm telling you right now, if Beathard would have started that game, San Francisco would have won. I mean, this guy, you know, Washington, for the 49ers offense couldn't do anything early on in that game. I mean, Hoyer was anemic. The offense as a whole just couldn't. I mean, they were struggling to get first downs. And all of a sudden, this guy comes in, again, a rookie quarterback, and they're going up and down the field. I was like, what? Was there a scout report on this guy? I'm not inside the locker room. I don't get to talk to any coaches, but they were caught off guard surprised that this guy got in the game. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, he came in and getting the team. Again, he's not a great player. You know, he's got some intangibles. He made some plays on the run, made some nice plays. But he's not this guy who you just say, wow, this guy could be the next coming of so-and-so. Like, no, he's not on that level. But the way the team just moved up and down the field, as soon as he came in the game, I mean, right away, the first drive was just remarkable for a guy who unheralded coming out of college, not much mentioned as far as when he got, you know, when he was, you know, when he was drafted coming into the season. You know, he's not like Trubisky from the Bears. So, again, Washington fortunate to win this game. You get a just you know you get a missed extra point, which could have cost Washington. Kirk Cousins again had a better day than what people want to give him credit for. 25-37, 330 yards, 2 touchdowns, an interception. 1 interception was called back. You would think that based on those numbers and based on the performance that Kirk Cousins, you know, almost cost him a game. I mean, let's calm down on the expectations of Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Ben Roethlisberger. He's not Drew Brees. Let's calm down if he missed a couple throws. I mean, the overreaction of, inconsistent and da-da-da. Let's calm down. I mean, last time I checked, 25-37 is what? You do the math on that percentage. That's over 60%. That has to be. I'm going to calculate it right. I'm going back to calculate it right now. But 67% is pretty good in my book. That's what I'm saying. You complete 67% of the passes. You'll take that every day of the weekend, and 3 times on Sunday. So a little overreaction as far as, you know, Kirk Cousins' performance. Yeah, he missed some throws, but for the most part, I thought he played well. But again, Washington was very fortunate to win this game, even though they pushed San Francisco around in terms of the line of scrimmage, as far as time possession, 419 total yards. San Francisco easily could have won this game. And I'm telling you right now, I've seen worse pick calls flagged in my lifetime. Like that pick by Pierre Garçon was not a dead bet. That was, to say that was a suspect call is an understatement. That was not. Again, I've seen worse pick plays. And I'm telling you right now, if that call isn't made, San Francisco probably is going to win that game. They would have first and 10 at the 41-yard line. They would drive and had all the momentum. Just went right down the field to Washington's defense. Again, this is a game that you will take. You will, you know, a coach's dream as far as, hey, win the game, but I have your attention. So Jay Gruden should have, you know, full attention of this team over the course of the week. They have a big Monday night showdown and a game that they have to win if they want any chance, if they have any hopes of winning this division. They're going to have to win against next Monday night against Philadelphia. So 26-24, Washington improves to 3-2 on the season coming off the bye. San Francisco falls to 0-6. Again, San Francisco is not a they are not an 0-6 football team. I believe San Francisco has a lot of talent on the defensive end. Wait until they get Reuben Foster back. Again, this quarterback, maybe he makes a couple plays. They will not finish with the worst record. I think San Francisco will win three or maybe even 4 games, to be honest with you. Because some of these bounces are gonna start coming their way, just the law of averages. Their defense is very good. They have a very good defense, hard hitting, play hard from start to finish. Offensively, again, they're limited as far as what they can do at the quarterback position. You know, Hyde is a decent runner, pretty good runner. Garçon, you know, they don't have too many weapons on the outside of Garçon, but that team plays hard, and that will win you at least 2-3 games alone in the NFL. So I expect San Francisco to be heard from as far as a team that could possibly be a spoiler for teams that are trying to make the playoffs or somebody trying to get home field advantage in the AFC. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quick Sports Podcast. Busy program. 39 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast, just about 20 minutes away from Game 3 as Game 3 of the LCS as the scene shifts to Baltimore, to New York. That crowd should be live tonight as they, again, find themselves down 0-2. Listen, those games were classic games. Friday and Saturday with Houston and New York. The Yankee pitching, you can't ask for any more out of the Yankee pitching if you're the Yankees. I mean, I thought, they call it a bad break with Cervino. Hopefully he can pitch again before the series is over. Chapman, as great as he's as dominant as he can be, he is vulnerable. He can be vulnerable at times. In these games, in these postseason games. We saw that last year against Cleveland. You have a situation where Houston's top two aces just were, basically almost unhittable. The Verlander performance is one that you're going to look back 5-10 years from now, you're going to say that's one of the better performances that you've seen in recent memory in a playoff game. That he was so dominant. And I know he gave up one run, 9 innings, goes the full 9, 13 strikeouts, throwing as hard in the ninth inning as he was in the first inning. And it was vintage Verlander. I think people forget because of the emergence of Kershaw couple years back and a Bumgarner in the postseason. People forget because those have been the two dominant pitchers in the postseason. You've had Kershaw has dominated the sport in the regular season over the last 4 or 5 years, and Bumgarner has dominated the sport when the Giants have made the postseason over the last 5 or 6 years. Verlander, before those guys came along, was the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, the guy won a Cy Young and an MVP in the same year. And a guy who I feel like is going to be, not if he retires right now, he's only 34, still got 3 or 4 years left, he seems to have a rubber arm, maybe he's one of these guys who can pitch until they're 40, but he will be in the Hall of Fame. He's got that type of stuff. And I think you forget how dominant this guy can be. But he certainly has gotten it done for Houston since he arrived there from Detroit, and now they find themselves two games away from their first World Series appearance since 2005. But don't count the Yankees. This is the type of series that is very close, and the Yankees could be up 2-0. So I think the Yankees will win. I think the Yankees will win tonight. And if they win tonight, then game 4, who knows? We'll see what happens with that. As far as the Cubs series goes, listen, I'm not going to knock the Cubs. The Dodgers right now are just, are a freight train. I mean, they are an absolute freight train. Even on a night in game 1 where Kershaw wasn't dominant, where he wasn't his usual self, regular season Kershaw, more like, he wasn't bad, but he was hittable. Even on a night like that, Cubs couldn't do anything with the Dodgers. Last night, again, Cubs keep it close, but Madden just makes him. And again, I'm probably a bigger fan of Joe Madden than most with some of his, awkward moves. But you cannot allow John Lackey to pitch to Justin Turner. I'm sorry, you either bring in Wade Davis or you walk the bases loaded. There was no way that that was going to turn out well with that guy. And I'm not even knocking Lackey. Lackey's, been a good pitcher for a long time. Won a game 7, back in 02 with the Indians. But at this stage in his career, against Justin Turner, looking at this guy's postseason pedigree, he's, the guy's hitting like 370 for his career in the postseason. 370. I mean, look at his splits. His numbers are ridiculous. And there's, again, it's still a point to where somebody other than Justin Turner on that roster would have to beat me. somebody else would have to beat me. Now, the problem is for the Cubs, Yasiel Puig has finally grown up and seemingly has, you know, realized his full potential and, you know, has a chance to be an all-star in the future. You know, you can't, they can't get him out. So that, you know, that complicates matters for Cubs pitchers, especially late in games. But there's no way, there's absolutely zero chance that I would pitch to Justin Turner in that spot with a base open. The bases would have had to be loaded. So he gets the big home run. Dodgers, again, are in total control. I would not be surprised if that's a sweep. Again, the Dodgers are playing that well right now. I would not be surprised if they sweep the Cubs. I expect the Yankees to make a series of Houston. I don't think they'll go quiet, but that Cubs series could end quick before you know it. 347-215-6180 is the call number. Today's headlines, of course, you have Aaron Rodgers will have surgery. Mike, you have McCarthy saying it will be in the near future. Of course, they had the broken collarbone on the hit by Barr. The hit was not a clean hit. It's not a clean hit because you cannot drive a quarterback into the ground. No flag was called. A flag should have been called, but, you know, them the breaks. That's football. That's the NFL. It's a violent sport. You can get knocked out in any given play. You can be knocked out of the game. So I'm not saying Barr was trying to hurt Rodgers, but the play should have been flagged. Listen, don't be surprised if you see Aaron Rodgers again before the season's over. I will say this. If Green Bay is in a position to either, one, make the playoffs or win the division, either or both, Aaron Rodgers will play again. Now, if they are, you know, 6-9, 5-10, if they're out of it, then it'll be easy. The decision will be, you know, cut and dry. If they're in it, I think there's a chance that he will play again. I really believe that. But again, I think the magic number is 9. I think realistically they have a chance at a wild card, division wild card, that they're gonna have to find a way to get to at least. I would say 8. 8 is the magic number. So, because if you get to 8, if you are 8-6 heading into week 16, you're 8-6 heading to week 16, I think, or 8-7 heading to week 17, I think that, you know, I think you'll see Rodgers possibly the last 2 weeks, or maybe even the last week of the season. Again, I understand it's different from his previous injury. When he broke his collarbone, it was his 2013 injury was his non-throwing shoulder. This one is on his throwing shoulder, so that's a major difference. But you have to pay attention to the language. When they don't rule him out immediately and right away, that to me tells me that there's a chance that he can play, that he may. They may play this season. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we'll get into the games and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. After the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast, because you have Monday Night Football with Tennessee in Indianapolis. Mariota has been cleared to play. Major League Baseball Day, ALCS Game 3, Houston traveling to New York to take on the Yankees up 2-0. And speaking of how you get, we talk about the pitching, but we have to mention what Altuve of Houston is doing. Like, I believe he will be the MVP. I think he's going to get the MVP over the likes of Judge or Encarnacion or Jose Ramirez or Trout. But this guy, at this point, you don't want to pitch to him anymore. I mean, you really are trying to avoid pitching to him. He's that hot right now. Just hitting everything in sight that's even closer to the plate. The Astros, that combo of he and Correa is just scary in the batting order. Correa starting to heat up, had the big hit, had the home run, had the big hit to win the game. That was a great slide by Altuve, by the way. That was a tremendous slide. Even though the ball should have been caught by Sanchez, that was a tremendous slide by Altuve. But Correa, we know how clutch he is, already in 12 postseason games, has 5 postseason home runs, still, 23 years old. They are a great offensive team. I mean, Houston can score runs, but again, it's been the pitching that has absolutely carried them. Minnesota over Green Bay, 23-10. I talked about the Aaron Rodgers injury early on in the program. Again, not only the best quarterback, but the best player in football. He's been the best player in football for the last 4 or 5 years now. So right now, if you're Green Bay, you're just trying to get to 8. You're trying to put yourself in a position where he could possibly come back, where that may could be an option. Over the course of this game, Minnesota didn't play great by any stretch of imagination. They just did enough to get by. Hundley didn't have a chance against that defense. 3 interceptions, 4 sacks for the Minnesota defense, which has a great front 7 and an all-pro caliber quarterback in Xavier Rhodes. Minnesota ran for 112 yards. Again, they had some turnovers themselves that kept Green Bay kind of somewhat in it, but you never got the sense that Green Bay was ever going to win this game once Aaron Rodgers was knocked out. McCarthy has already said that there's basically no chance that they're going to bring in another quarterback, including Colin Kaepernick, and he got annoyed by even a reporter bringing up Colin Kaepernick. I mean, you saw his face turn another shade of red, but they're not, Green Bay is they're the kind of franchise, they don't like bringing in outside talent anyway. They don't like bringing in free agents, people off the street anyway, so they draft well, they develop well, but this is one position that they will not be able to replace. The question to me is, can Callahan, who now is the backup, will he get a chance to play? If Hundley's that bad, if Hundley continues to play, the way he played yesterday, will Callahan get a shot? So that to me is the question amongst the active quarterbacks. Minnesota improves to 4-2. Green Bay drops to 4-2 on the season. Miami over Atlanta, 20-17. A shocking result considering, similar to the Washington game, this was a 17-0 Atlanta lead. But I told you the second half, Miami dominated. Atlanta doesn't score in the second half. They have some offensive issues without question with the new with Sarkisian. A little concerned about Atlanta. I'm not totally, they're still, with that 3-2 now, but I'm not going to say it's a nervous time, but I don't like how, just losing a game to Miami's not any good, okay? And we know Miami's not any good. So to allow, that's not a good sign when you allow a team to come inside into your building. You're up 17-0, and you can't score in the second half. So that is something that is troubling for Atlanta. Jay Ajayi had a big day, 130 yards rushing. Cutler made enough plays. Cutler was not spectacular. I think he threw for 151 yards, if that. Made enough plays, but didn't do anything spectacular. This was more about the Miami defense than it was about what they did offensively. They ran the ball, played good defense, and that was enough to hold off Atlanta team that, just not looking quite like themselves right now. Still, again, pound for pound, probably still the safest bet safest bet in the AFC, pound for pound, but there's some cracks right now down in Atlanta. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we come back, we'll get into some college football and much, much more. This latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. You know, when I looked at the college football schedule from this past week, weekend, you know, last week, you know, I said to myself, like, really? Like, these other games? I mean, I thought I was looking at the wrong week because I didn't expect anything. I looked at these games, I was like this can't be the schedule. 6 weeks into the college football, 7 weeks. This was week seven of the college football season, and lo and behold, Friday happens. So I'm telling you right now, you are going to get teams who are going to go, who are right as we speak, trying to avoid those Friday night games. We've already said, you saw USC go down. And of course, this Friday, it makes perfect sense. Friday the 13th, you see Clemson, and Washington State go down in the same night. I was doing the Clemson Syracuse game, and I guess I was in a state of shock and also distracted by also watching the Yankee Astro game. But you know, even before the Clemson quarterback got hurt. Got knocked out with the concussion. The game was, Syracuse was winning. Now I don't think they would have won because the quarterback is pretty good. And there's, you know, the major drop off from him to the backup. But Syracuse, you know, Syracuse was going up and down the field on Clemson. And you know, it's just one of those games. You know, you wonder, like, these schools like Clemson, these big-time programs, you just don't get the sense that they are conditioned to play on Fridays. Like, it just, I mean, to me, it's, especially on the road, it's like, Friday night football, you know, I just don't get the sense that these programs, especially if you're a favorite, that it's an upset way to happen at this point. And you know, Syracuse was close this season. They had a couple, you know, I don't know if anybody's really been paying attention to Syracuse, more known for basketball than certainly than football, but they've had a couple of close calls against LSU and against NC State, both who are ranked in the top 20. And, you know, both games at home. Well, I think the NC State game was actually at Raleigh. I know the LSU game was was in Syracuse at the Dome. So Syracuse definitely has improved. But I didn't see this coming by any stretch of imagination. I mean, I thought Clemson, a case could be made coming to that game, that Clemson was the best team in college football, the most complete team in college football. But now, you know, who knows how long their quarterback is going to be out. They still have a couple of tough games left in their schedule, along with the ACC championship. So moving forward, you know, again, they cannot, Clemson cannot afford another loss. And they certainly can't afford another loss. Washington, of course, fell on Saturday. To Arizona State. So you have Clemson, Washington. Washington State going down. Also, you had LSU, you had Auburn blowing a 20-point lead. So four of the top 10 teams in college football go down. Alabama, keeps rolling. So again, you never know with college football when one of these weeks is going to happen. Where it's just completely unexpected. But again, these Friday night games, I'm telling you right now, there's some bettors, there's some gamblers that are going to be looking hard with these Friday night games. Because, they have these, especially on the road. So, again, college football, you have a situation where the playoff standings will not come out until the 31st, till the end of the month. So, still some time for some teams to get their stuff together from that standpoint. But again, a big night, big weekend for some of the underdogs in college football. Next week, Michigan, Penn State. Michigan, who had to struggle just to get past Indiana, so they still have some offensive issues, to say the least. So Penn State looks, for some revenge there, considering what happened last year. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we'll get back to the NFL. Steelers back to Steelers get back on, back in it, and a call that still has me scratching my head. We'll talk about that in the top five teams on this latest edition of the Sir Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Again, I understand Judge is striking out every appearance, every receiver, every appearance. But still, there's a lot of talent on that field between those two teams. Pittsburgh over Kansas City, 19-13. Pittsburgh gets back to its roots. That is tough D and running the football. Le'Veon Bell, 32 carries for 179 yards. Pittsburgh completely dominated this game. From the line of scrimmage, it was a point in the game where Kansas City had about 25 yards midway through the third quarter. Couldn't do anything offensively. But Kansas City, mind you, has came to this game banged up. Especially on offense with a couple of the offensive tackles and a couple of the offensive linemen. Pittsburgh has that number regardless. 6-1 in the last seven games. They've handled Kansas City. You saw the Chilla Bees, Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown all had big days, including Le'Veon Bell. And again, that was the first time. That was by far the best game Pittsburgh has played all season long. They played with an ad. They played with an attitude. They played with a chip on their shoulder. And, you know, it's, it makes a big difference when a team decides just to play football and not to, you know, be, not to have their franchise Hall of Fame quarterback talking retirement or their superstar running back, you know, complaining about carries or their star wide receiver flipping over Gatorade canisters. It makes a whole lot of difference. You just zero in on and just play football. So, great performance out of the Steelers. They improved to 4-2 on the season. Kansas City falls to 5-1. Kansas City falls to 5-1 on the season. Giants shock Denver 23-10. This was definitely without question the shocker of the week. Giants dominated this game for the line of scrimmage. They especially with the offensive line. The offensive line played as about as well as they could possibly play. 148 yards rushing. Simeon. This is one of these games where this was a classic pad the stats game. Simeon was terrible in this game. Yet, you know, you'll see 375 yards passing. He was not, to me, a non-factor. Most of the stats came when the game was, to me, out of reach. Just a flat performance out of Denver. Their kicker, McManus, who at one point was, you know, one of the better kickers in the league, all of a sudden, you know, has the yips. Again, give the Giants a lot of credit. Just a tremendous performance on the road. You know, they kind of circled the wagons defensively. They were all over Simeon, pushed the bottom offensive line all over the place. And again, I'll say this, what I said with Pittsburgh. No Beckham, no Rodgers Cromartie, no nonsense. Amazing. That, you know, it's, you know, what a coincidence that you don't have to hear about this and that, and about guys walking off the field or getting into fights on the field and stuff like that. And when you clear all that nonsense out, look what can happen. And again, the Giants, again, the Giants were standing 0-7. You're looking at, you know, it was getting to the point where you were wondering, you know, when the Giants' first win was going to come. And I certainly wouldn't have bet any amount of money that the Giants were going to go down there, go up there, go to Denver, and just handle the Broncos the way they did. But that was a great job by them. They improved to 1-5 on the season. Denver has some offensive issues, to say the least. If you can contain their running game, Simeon is not beaten. That's all you have to do is contain Denver's running game. If Denver can outrun the ball, they have no chance. They can't score. They have clearly, I mean, Simeon is clearly, he's the epitome of a game manager. Now, he's better than Blake Bortles, which is not saying much. It's not saying much at all. But they, you know, they're not going to give Simeon too much. And again, you know, that only lasts for so long in an NFL where you got that, you know, because at some point your quarterback has to make plays. New England over the Jets 24-17. Jets were up 14-0, but again, the play of the game, and all due respect to the Patriots, who, you know, deserved to win and did enough to win. The call, the reversal of the Seferian Jenkins touchdown is probably one of the worst calls that I've seen in a long time. And from this standpoint, the call on the field was touchdown, number one. That's number one. Number two, again, and I watched this play YouTube about at least a dozen times. Like, it was, yeah, I watched this play a number of times. Again, from my vantage view, from my vantage point, and from the angles that I saw it, now, again, NFL people have other. They have more technology and different vantage points than I have, and than my computer or television has. But the bottom line is, from what I saw, he lost control of the ball, regained it right before he hit the pylon, touchdown. Again, this is a play that I've never seen a touchdown called back when a guy bobbles the ball. Like, this is not Dez. This is not Dez Bryant. Like, Dez Bryant in terms of is completing the process of the catch. That was a completing the process of the catch. Where you like the rule or not, the rule is the rule. This was not that. The ball never touched the ground. And another, there are two problems with the officials on this play. Number one, the fact that they said that they ruled it a touchdown on the field, which is important from the standpoint of it has to be, the evidence has to be just overwhelming in terms of the reversal. It can't be, well, maybe, or it could have been. It has to be cut and dry. This was far from being cut and dry. And number two, the idea that they're saying that he stepped out of bounds, that he was out of bounds before he had control of the ball. My question is, when was he out of bounds? When was he out of bounds with the ball juggling or the ball being loose? Because again, when he hit that pylon, he had total control. He had control of that of the football when he hit that pylon. So I look at this again. You have two of your esteemed officials or former ex-officials, Blandino, Pereira, saying that, hey, touchdown, not enough to overturn. The NFL, the officials just completely just blew this one. I mean, that's all. There's no debate about it. They just blew it. It happens. I mean, it's not the first time that you saw an official has blown a call. It happens. But this one was, you're the Jets. This one was tough to swallow. Because I thought the Jets played well. The Jets fought. I'm not saying the Jets deserved to win. I'm not going to go that far. New England did make made enough plays and did come back and take the lead. But that play, the Jets deserved better from that standpoint. That play, in essence, decided the game. That should not have been the case. I mean, it was a horrible call. Horrible call. Like, again, you have to explain to me. Maybe I just don't know what a fumble is at this point. Forget about what a catch is. What is a, if that's a fumble, what is a fumble? Like, what is a fumble if that's a fumble? So, just go down 24-17. Their record is even at 3-3. Fall 3-3. New England improves to, Blatantly improves to 4-2 on the season. Top five teams, I have Philly number one at 5-1, New England number two at 4-2, Pittsburgh number three at 4-2, and Kansas City number four at 4-2, and Carolina rounding out my top five at 4-2. Of course, again, Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hurt, Green Bay would be rounding out my top five. Or maybe even high as fourth, but I can't put Green Bay in the top five at this point. Even at 4-2 with no Aaron Rodgers, Philadelphia is deserving of deserving to be of their record. Excuse me, Kansas City is 5-1. I mean, I give them two losses, their performance wasn't that bad. So Kansas City is 5-1. So correction on that one, they are tied with the Eagles for the best record in the league. Eagles are playing well. I mean, Eagles, they have everything going. That was a big win on Thursday night. We talked about that a little bit in the post game, for the baseball post game. But so Eagles are playing well. They have a franchise quarterback. Both lines are, running the ball well. We'll see how, they're going to be a target now. We'll see moving forward. They have a big game hosting Washington. And to me, Eagles win this game, they could not so much, they could almost all, but I feel like wrap up the division. They win this game, they'll be 6-1, Washington will be 3-3, in essence, basically 3.5 games out of first place, based on the sweep. So, they can really stamp their place in the division with a win next Monday night at home. So they're playing well right now. I had to put New England over Pittsburgh yesterday. Pittsburgh never beats New England in a big spot. So just based on pedigree and, you know, based on how the teams are playing, I have to put New England over Pittsburgh. CC goes 3-up, 3-down. And again, he's a perfect guy to have on the mound in this type of spot. Veteran pitcher, at home, big game to win. Not going to be overwhelmed by the moment. Was great in his last start in that game 5 decisive game against Boston. So they couldn't have a. He is the perfect guy to have in this spot, considering the circumstances. Down 2-0 in the series, he gets off to a clean inning, bottom of the first, no score between Yankees and Astros. When we return, we'll talk about Harvey Weinstein. That's coming up, and much more in this edition of Circle of Queens Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Sergio Quinn Sports Podcast. They have yet, I'm going to do, we're going to have the baseball right now, to the football, football in about 10 minutes. So, NFL, kick off about 8:30 for the football. Again, 0-0, no score, bottom of the first. Houston, CC got through a clean inning with the Yankees. Again, veteran pitcher, knows how to win big games. Yankees are up. Will be at bat in the bottom of the first. Need to get some of these bats going, especially Judge. They need Judge, you know, to at least get on base. I mean, you obviously want him impacting with his power, but even if he gets a couple of walks, that will go a long way. I think the Yankees should be able to score some runs off Morton. I know Morton has pitched well, as you see on the graphic here, since September 1st. But again, in this spot, Yankee Stadium, the Yankees should be able to get to this guy for about 4 or 5 runs. So we'll see what happens. Again, bottom of the first, no scores, Houston and New York. I'm reading all this stuff about Harvey Weinstein, listening, you know, to various outlets talk about this situation. And it was gotten to a point in society, in our culture, that, you know, and you saw this with Bill Cosby, where it's just not, you know, it doesn't surprise you anymore when this stuff happens, which is scary. Something like this happens, and again, I'm not going to, this is not as extreme as Las Vegas was, because no lives were lost, per se, but what was lost, I mean, when we talk about some of these assaults, alleged rapes, and just the behavior of not only Harvey Weinstein, but the people around him who enabled him, his brother, Ben Affleck, lawyers, anybody to me who knew about it that's connected to Miramax and that production company that knew about it is almost as guilty as Harvey Weinstein. I don't care about the fact that they're going to change the company name. That means nothing to me. That's not helping the victims. I guess my message would be to, you know, I'm looking at a way to, like, solve this. What can you do? Like, because we can't look back anymore. We can't look back. Can't go back to 1984, 1994, 2004 when some of these assaults or rapes or things allegedly occurred. Can't go back in time. But I guess I'm looking at moving forward from a standpoint of how can this be prevented? And to me, number one thing that can go, you know, a ways and that could help prevent this, not completely stop it, is for women to speak up right away. Now, I want to make this clear, okay? By no means is any woman who was assaulted, raped, harassed by Harvey Weinstein responsible for his actions. By no means. Make that crystal clear. What I'm saying is, there's this culture where you have women who are scared to death to come out because of what they, because they, you know, they'll just feel like it threatens their careers. They're embarrassed. They don't want to revisit the situation. And I'll give you a perfect example. So Nelly was accused of rape a few days ago. Let me read to you what his accuser told the police to drop the investigation. I'm going to read to you the letter. Let me read to you this letter from his accuser. And the accuser wrote it, sent it off, gave it to her attorney, and here's how it goes. This is titled To Whom It May Concern. We do not live in a society where a 21-year-old college student can feel safe enough to pursue criminal charges against a celebrity for an alleged rape. If in a moment of panic and fear, she immediately calls 911, she will be interviewed, detained, and then sent to a hospital where a rape kit will be administered. Hours later, after she is allowed to return home, she will look at her phone only to be besieged by text messages of screenshots of internet articles already describing the incident. Before her initial tears have dried, her phone will ring and she will belatedly realize that she is talking to a reporter who is trying to befriend her. How did this reporter get my number? Will echo through her mind. As she cries alone in her apartment with mounting hysteria, she will learn that the celebrity and his lawyer are issuing public statements that her allegation is devoid of credibility and is motivated by greed and vindictiveness, that her agenda is money, fame, and notoriety, that she is making a dangerous, fraudulent allegation to accomplish her goals, and that they will pursue every legal option to address this defaming claim. The investigating detective will ask that she attend a joint meeting with the prosecutor's office to give a full recorded statement. Even though she remains distraught and frightened, somehow she will summon the courage to give the interview on Monday, October 9th. The detective promises that no one will know that she has met with them until the investigation is closed. Her privacy is assured. On Tuesday, October 10th, the commander of the police department issues a statement to the media advising that she meet with the police and prosecutor that Monday. The detective apologizes on Wednesday, October 11th, and says, "Regardless, I gave the victim my word that the interview would not be shared during the early part of the investigation. I failed her with that promise. Every step of the way since the time she called 911, she wishes she had not. Not because what happened didn't occur exactly the way she described it, not because she did not want the police to charge the celebrity with alleged rape. She wishes she had not called 911 because she believes the system is going to fail her. She wonders who is she to go by her small, unimportant self? Who is she to go by her small, unimportant self against a celebrity? Who will believe her? People are saying horrible things already. She cannot handle this. She is about to break. She wants to close the door. She wants this to end. She just can't bear it. And so today, she is telling the Auburn Police Department and the King County Prosecutor's Office to put a halt to the criminal investigation of Cornell Hayes Jr., a.k.a. Nelly. She will not testify further in a criminal proceeding against him. She never wanted notoriety. She never wanted a dime from that man. She wants to go home. She wants to go back to school and to graduate. And this she cannot do if she remains hidden in her room, crying her heart out. One day, maybe our world will change, and 30 women will not be needed to eventually speak out against a celebrity who has hurt them in order to be believed. But that day has not yet come. Very truly yours, Karen Kohler, the attorney, CC Klein. So that is, you know, that letter is years in the making. And I say that because, again, when this happens, when there's an assault, when there's a rape, harassment, and the accusee or the person who commits the assault isn't held accountable, then this cycle will just continue on and on and on. Now again, you have to understand, like, the type of psychological damage that this does to someone, having to harbor that for years and feel helpless. You know, it's not death, but it is, you know, you, in essence, you know, that letter, I mean, again, read the letter. USA Today has it. So USA Today has it, and it's, once you go down to the article, to like around the third paragraph, or where it says through a letter from Karen Kohler, click on that link and the letter will come up who it may concern, and it will be yes, Karen Kohler. It'll show all her information as far as the attorney, you know, the Karen Kohler, the Velvet Hammer. That's, you know, her, you know, I guess her name that she goes by as far as her attorney slogan. But this, you know, it made the Harvey Weinstein thing made me think about transpired with Nelly and his accuser in the last couple of days. And again, this type of stuff happens all the time on campuses, sometimes in the workplace, sometimes within families. Okay, let's keep it real. So, again, it's not me pointing fingers at women, but it's me kind of like, you know, urging women, pleading to women to stand up, not only for themselves, but to stand up for, you know, other women, future women, women that, and children who have not even been born yet, to be honest with you. I'm going in that direction with that. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Show Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. 0-0, top second, no outs. Gregory has got picked off. I think they're in the inning. Also showed a gentleman being about to be escorted out by the securities. I don't know what happened. I missed that part of it. Carlos Correa's up 2-2 count, so we'll see what happens with that. Monday Night Football is about to start. Again, I hate to end the program on that type of note, but it was just something that had to be said by me that I had to talk about. I will see you next time on this next edition of the Sir Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. Have a great rest of your evening. So long.